ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 10, Verse number 18. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Sri Saptabhi, Pita, Puta, Pitrabhi, Saha, Te, Anaga, Yat, Sadho, Asya, Kule, Jatha, Bhavan, Vai, Kula, Pavana. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Tri Saptabhi Pita Puta, Pitrabhi Sahate Naga, Yat Sadho Syakule Jato, Bhavan Vaikula Pavana. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Sri Saptabhi Pita Puta, Pitrabhi Sahate Naga, Yat Sadho Syakule Jato, Bhavan Vaikula Pavana. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Tri Saptabhi Pita Puta, Pitrabhi Sahate Naga, Yat Sadho Syakule Jato, Bhavan Vaikula Pavana.
Please chant.
Ladies. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Trisaptabhi. Seven multiplied by three. That is to say, 21. Pita, father. Putaha, purified. Pitvi, with your forefathers. Saha, all together. Te, your. Anaga, O most sinless personality. Prahlad Maharaj. Yat, because. Sadho, O great saintly person. Asya, of this indeed. Kula Bhavana. Did I skip a line? I'm sorry, but I thought I did, yeah. Sorry about that. Let's just go back to Prahlad Maharaj. Okay. Yat, because. Sadho, O great saintly person. Asya, of this person. Kule, in the dynasty. Jatha, took birth. Bhavan, you. Vai, indeed. Kulapavana, the purifier of the whole dynasty. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, My dear Prahlad, O most pure, O great saintly person, your father has been purified along with 21 forefathers in your family. Because you were born in this family, the entire dynasty has been purified. Please repeat. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, My dear Prahlad, O most pure, O great saintly person, your father has been purified along with 21 forefathers in your family. Because you were born in this family, the entire dynasty has been purified. Purport. The word Trisaptabhi means seven multiplied by three. In one's family, one can count back four or five generations to one's great-grandfather or even one's great-grandfather's father. But since the Lord mentions 21 forefathers, this indicates that the benediction expands to other families also. Before the present family in which one has taken birth, one must have been born in other families. Thus, when a Vaishnav takes birth in a family, by the grace of the Lord, he purifies not only that family, but also the families of his previous births. Oma ginati maranda syaganjana shilakaya chakshur unmilitam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. I'll just read the translation again. My dear Prahlad, O most pure, O great saintly person, your father has been purified along with 21 forefathers in your family. Because you were born in this family, the entire dynasty has been purified. So this is a very important explanation that Srila Prabhupada gives us. First of all, the very idea from the previous verse is that Prahlad Maharaj, he was very concerned about the ultimate destination of his father. Of course, he didn't know that his father was originally one of the two great devotees who were gatekeepers of the the Vaikuntha planet, gatekeepers to the palace of Lord Vishnu, and that they had been cursed by the four Kumaras to take birth in the material world. They had a choice of seven births, which would be favorable to the Lord, or three births in which they would be an enemy of the Lord. And they chose three in order to get out as fast as possible. They didn't want to hang around the material world. So as it is mentioned in the previous verse, Prahlad Maharaj is very concerned about his father, because his father had committed many offenses, both to him and to Lord Vishnu. And he wanted his father to be saved. He wanted his father to be delivered. And while he did not particularly care for the qualities that his father exhibited, especially against himself and Lord Vishnu, nonetheless, he saw his father not merely as a father, a material father. He saw him as it's mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, the humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision a learned and gentle Brahmin, a cow, an elephant, a dog, or a dog eater. He sees the same Supreme Lord indwelling in his father as in himself and in all beings. So therefore, he sees his father basically as a soul covered over, and as a result of that covering, I say covered over with ignorance, covered over with illusions, covered over with so much misery as a result of that illusion and that ignorance. So covered, and he feels, and this is the important point, why should he even ask for his father's deliverance? Why should he even care about it? After all, his father subjected him to so many torments and tortures. He's being stomped by elephants, thrown off a mountain, subjected to poison, blasting winds, extreme heat, icy cold, thrown into the ocean to drown. Of course, none of these work, because if the Lord wants to save someone, nobody can kill him. And if the Lord wants to kill that someone, no one can save him. So Prahlad was under the protection of the Lord. He always depended upon the Lord. He didn't care what happened to him, but he depended upon the protection only in the sense that Krishna would be looking after him. And whatever would happen would be fine as long as it was with the approval, as long as it was happening as a result of God's will and not merely some karmic reaction. And he was very concerned about this. Thy will be done. Your will be done, Lord. So he never cared, and he never held it against his father that all these things had been done to him. He didn't hold it against his father because he loved his father. And why does he love his father? Because he saw the Supreme Lord within his father. And he saw the same soul that indwelled himself, that he was, or he is. He is a soul, his father's a soul, but his father's a covered soul. Father's a contaminated soul. Father is an impure soul. So he wanted his father to become pure and to experience the wonderful joy, peace, strength, and happiness that he himself was so wonderfully experiencing. This is the nature of devotee. He wants to share his joy, share his peace, share his love. Wherever he goes, he's bubbling over. But he can't contain it, and thus it must go someplace, and he wants to share it. So this was the nature of Prahlad Maharaj, and this is one of the reasons that Srila Prabhupada put such a strong emphasis on this particular devotee. I just read, I think it was last night, that of the 12 Mahajans, Prahlad is considered the best. He was there. And the best in the sense that there was never a single moment when he was not depending upon Krishna. As Krishna says, in all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. If you become conscious, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. If you do not do that, then and you live by your false ego, then you will be lost. And those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. So Krishna makes this guarantee, makes a promise. He says he will protect you. But protection means, in the ultimate sense, how we can advance in Krishna consciousness. Protection can mean a pound on the head or a kick in the gut. Protection can also mean a pat on the head. And it can also mean a warm embrace. Whatever Krishna sees and thinks that we need to go to our next highest level of spiritual advancement, that's what he will give. And that's what protection means. Sometimes people think protection means, well, everything should be comfortable, everything should be sweet, I should have all my sense gratification at my disposal whenever I want it, nobody shall obstruct me, nobody should hinder me, everything should go right, my car should work well, it should never break down, my internet should never crash, everything should should go perfect. This is their idea of being protected. It's absurd. Now, when you're in the material world, things are going to go wrong. Things are going to go bad. There's no question about it. The question really is how you regard it, how you take it, how you accept it. If you are transcendental, as the verse that I just mentioned gives, if you're transcendental, then you don't feel it. It doesn't go to the heart. It never goes beyond the skin. When a sage remains unruffled, undisturbed, unshaken, peaceful, calm, quiet, because he is in transcendence. That's what transcendence is. It's all peace, it's all strength, it's all confidence, it's all love. It's all charity, it's all kindness, it's all sweetness. These are just some of the many qualities in transcendence, which we saw so grandly expressed in our Srila Prabhupada. When we saw him smile, we felt we were being bathed in a radiation of suns far, far warmer, in a different sense of warmth, than the external sun could ever give us. He gave us the warmth of Krishna, the smile of Krishna, the love of Krishna, the goodness of Krishna, the sweetness of Krishna. Something incredible, something we had never experienced before. So wonderful, so great, that we, like moths, were simply attracted. Although, to his light, only unlike moths, we did not get burned. Rather, we became enlivened, inflamed, so to speak, with his love. And went forth doing the various services that he engaged us in with that love that he communicated and conveyed to us. So Prahlad was very concerned about his father's misery. His father was so miserable, and he, because he was a pure soul, could feel the misery that his father was undergoing. After all, it's mentioned that his father used to get drunk on strong-smelling wines. Why does a person do that? Because he's miserable. Here he is, virtual owner of the entire universe. There he is, with sway over everyone and everything, the demigods quivering and shaking just when his eyebrows jump with some degree of disgust or animosity. He had it all. He had everything. There was nothing he didn't have. And yet he was miserable. Completely miserable. Why miserable? Because he was not in touch with, in a loving way, in a servicing way, in a surrendered way, with Krishna. When we associate, for example, Srila Prabhupada gives that example of the cold iron bar put into the fire. It's cold to begin with, but then it becomes hot and hotter and hotter and hotter. Similarly, as the heart associates with the Supreme Lord through the Hare Krishna mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, as we associate with Krishna, because Krishna is not different from His name. And He has invested Himself in His name. And having invested Himself in His name, when we chant the name with our full heart, with absorption, the pause that refreshes. When we chant His name with our full consciousness, with full devotion, not merely just chanting, as I so often hear, or the yawning, or ma 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 ma, or the shri 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 shnef 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 shnef. No. We're chanting with our whole heart. When we're chanting with the whole heart, it means we are addressing a person. Not just a sound, but the sound is going to the heart of the Lord. And when the sound goes to the heart of the Lord feels that. And He cherishes that. He treasures that. The pure devotee is always within the core of my heart. And I am always within the heart of the pure devotee. The devotee does not know anything else but me. And I do not know anything else but him. This is the Lord. The Lord is the closer, the deeper, the more focused our chanting is as a love offering to the Lord. The more He receives that, and He reciprocates that. And in reciprocating that, He literally, slowly, but surely, first there are drops of joy, bliss. Then the drops become like a rain. It starts, and then it becomes heavier and heavier and heavier, until finally it becomes a downpour of His grace in the form of divine bliss. This is Krishna. As they surrender and pray, I reward them accordingly. But you know what? In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he states that devotees like Srimati Radharani and the gopis, he states, I can't reward them. I cannot repay what they have given me. So in that sense, it's a contradiction. He may reward those of us who are nowhere near that high level of ecstatic love for Krishna. But he feels totally in debt to them. Like he can't do anything to, he can't offer anything. So he says, please be satisfied with your own devotional service. What does he mean by that? It means he gives himself. That's all he can give. He gives of himself, and what he gives himself, he gives everything that is within him in the sense of transcendental bliss, peace, strength, love. The gopis of Vrindavan were just so completely absorbed in him that their every moment was a moment of ecstasy, either in separation because Krishna would go out to the fields with his cows. They would feel tremendous ecstasy. They would feel transcendental envy of the cowherd boys who got a chance to play with Krishna, to talk with Krishna, to push Krishna around, to wrestle with Krishna. And here they were just watching him going out to the cow, the dust rising and the cows going out. And their tears were just flowing down their cheeks. And they were just wishing, and they would close their eyes. And they would, as they closed their eyes, they would see Krishna right in their minds. We know that because when Krishna disappeared on that night of the, when he disappeared on the Ras Lila at night, they were talking to the trees, you know, oh, this tree and that tree. They were talking to the dame of the different trees. Have you seen the son of Maharaja here? Have you seen the son of Maharaj Nanda there? And then they would see him in their mind. Because their intensity of their love was so strong that they could not let it go. They could not stop thinking of him. They were stuck on him. It was like cement. So if he was here, they were looking at him. But if he was not here, they were looking at him within their heart. And they were yearning when they would see that physical form come back. So this is the feeling of Prahlad Maharaj. So much sympathy did he have, so much empathy did he have for his father. This is unseemly, it's unheard of, it's uncanny that somebody could love a father who is such a great, incredible, horrendous child abuser. Who could love such a father? Only a great saint, a great sage like Prahlad Maharaj could do this. Because he was above the body, above the mind, above the intelligence, and he lived on the transcendental platform. And we see that, how he shared it with all his little friends, told them to stop playing, stop having all this so-called fun. You're going to die. You can die any day. Even though you're a little boy, don't think you can't die. Little boys die also. So get serious. Become steady. Chant the holy name. Look at my father. He's suffering all the time. He wants to kill me. Wasting his life. Chant the holy name and feel happy all the time. All this nonsense they're teaching us, not going to get us anywhere but another birth. So this is the very wonderful quality of Prahlad Maharaj, his empathy. And a devotee can feel, as he becomes more and more advanced, he can feel the feelings of others very, very sensitively. He can know when a devotee is disturbed or upset or peaceful or joyful or happy or disgusted or frustrated. It registers. And a devotee who is advancing, when he sees another devotee in a state of despair or frustration or despondency, he immediately goes and he says he'll try to start a conversation and try to draw it out of the person so that he can perhaps give some consolation. Give some compassion, give some kindness, some sweet words, some encouragement, some enthusiasm, so that that person who's feeling down will be lifted up. The bliss that the devotee feels in his heart, he wants to share it. He wants to inject it, just as Krishna and Srila Prabhupada has injected it to us. He wants to inject it so that another person who is feeling dark and blue will now feel light and golden. He wants to bring that out. That's the nature of devotee. Those who are distributing books know what I'm talking about. You see a down person, and then the person gets the book, and you talk to him for 10 minutes, and the person has some hope. He has some optimism. Or you see it on Harinam, that people are walking, you know, with their faces down like so, and then they hear the holy name, and they see the devotees dumping and dancing and clapping in the street. They get automatically... The contagion of emotion spreads to their heart, and you see them, they're starting to clap their hands, and they're tapping their feet on the floor, and they're smiling. This is wonderful. This is what Srila Prabhupada gave us, to share Krishna consciousness anywhere and everywhere we can go, especially to those in most need. This is important. Now, coming back to the verse which is mentioned, that 21 generations back, or ancestors... So that was always a question to many devotees, I know. If you go back, you have Prahlad Maharaj, and then you have his father is Hiranyakashipu. That's one generation. Then Hiranyakashipu comes from Kashyapa Muni, another generation. Kashyapa Muni comes from the forefather, Marichi. And Marichi comes from whom? Lord Brahma. So Lord Brahma is, now where do you go from Lord Brahma? And Lord Brahma is already purified, and to a great degree. Srila Prabhupada refers to him as a pure devotee of the Lord. And Marichi is quite pure. So what happens? You just have four generations there. How do we get back to the other 17? So it's mentioned right here that Prahlad had other births, and in those other births he had fathers and he had mothers. And those fathers and mothers had fathers and mothers, and those fathers had mothers and fathers. And 21 generations back were all blessed and benefited as a result of Prahlad Maharaj's glorious life of pure devotional love. It shows us what a great responsibility we have to our families. We're born into a family, for example, our mothers and fathers. Father goes out and breaks his back every day trying to earn a living. Mother is out there, you're buying the foods and feeding you and clothing you and making meals and doing this, making the house nice and clean. I mean, she's doing so many things. But quite often as children, we just take them for granted because they're supposed to do that. That's their legal responsibility. But that's not it. There are so many mothers who are not doing that. There are so many abusive mothers who ignore their children, neglect their children, are indifferent to them, couldn't care less about them, and those kids end up in penitentiaries quite often because of the lack of love that they didn't receive. So we have to be very thankful. And being thankful means that Krishna has given us this mother, and any love manifesting from your mother is coming from Krishna. He can withdraw some, he can let it all out, but it comes ultimately from Krishna. After my mother died, I really began to realize what Krishna's life was. How much love she showered upon me, especially in the later years, more so in the kid years. When I was young, she was always smacking me around because I was a naughty boy. Alan, what are you doing? Get out of there. To give you an example, she bought some new curtains, I remember. No, she used to have a babysitter watch me who was a nurse. And just for fun, I took the scissors and I cut up her uniform. And I wasn't a little tiny tot. I was 7 years old at that time. I still remember it because I never could forget the beating that I got. So the important thing is, as you get older, you realize how many wonderful things have been done by the mother and by the father. And so the important thing is God. Krishna is giving us so many things. We know that love, as it comes to mother, comes to father or uncle, especially grandma. So that love is all coming from Krishna. During those days, I didn't know that. But as we become Krishna conscious, we realize, my Lord, you have loved me in so many people. So many embraces I have gotten. So many smiles I have received. So many pats on the head I have gotten. So many compliments I have gotten. So much applause I have gotten. And all this is coming as a matter of your affection for me. This is your way of saying thank you, but it's you're saying to me that whatever you're giving me is nothing compared to what I deserve. And I'm saying to you, I don't deserve one fraction of it. So this is the interesting aspect of the devotee. Rather, he feels he is always in debt. And being in debt, he cannot see the end of it, because as he looks up and he sees them, it doesn't come to an end. The sky is not as high, the sky is not high enough. And so when a devotee works in this mood of indebtedness, wanting to repay the unrepayable with the love that he has received from Krishna, either directly to Krishna on the altar when you're doing certain direct devotional services, or when we are serving devotees. So our responsibility is to the entire world. That's what Krishna consciousness means. The purer we become, the more loving we become, the more kindly we become, the more thoughtful we become, the more concerned we become about other people's need for deliverance or salvation, or whatever they happen to need at that particular point in time. By having that responsiveness as a result of the greater sensitivity that we have from Krishna consciousness, by doing that, you win the favor of so many people. You win this. You win converts to Krishna consciousness by your love. You can have the philosophy, but if you're unaffectionate, if you're uncaring, if you're callous, if you're indifferent, if you're thoughtless, if you answer people in a rough, gruff way, they don't care about your philosophy because you're not presenting it, you're not expressing it, you're not delivering it. And if we're not delivering it, then we're just hypocrites. So we need to go, all of us, including yours truly here, hypocrite, yes, I am. So therefore, important that we have to think of ourselves, am I giving the kind of affection that this person needs so that he can go and grow and develop higher, so that he can become attracted to Prabhupada's writings, become attracted to the Krishna conscious philosophy? Will he find something warm and sweet and loving and kind and lovable in me that will make him feel propelled, compelled to want to look into this? If we are not doing that, then we are failing in our duty. So, therefore, we have this point. Now, it's a very good example of this wonderful quality of thy will be done. We see this in Bharat Maharaj. What a wonderful example we have in that story. After he, first, of course, he was the sage who became attracted to a deer. And so attracted was he that when he died, the last thought in his mind was the little fawn that he was taking care of. And as a result, he became born as a deer. But he had consciousness of the fact of that previous life. And he also had philosophical and intelligent understanding of Krishna consciousness. And we know this because he didn't associate with, he didn't familiarize himself with all the other deer. He went where the sages were. And he just folded his forelocks, or whatever they call them, and he would just listen to the different discourses in the forest. And that would be the means, that would be the way in which he would get a better birth when he would die. And when he died, he got the birth of a Brahmin family. But he realized that by becoming so attached to the deer as he did, even though he had renounced his life, he could get attached to his family. And getting so attached, because in Brahmin families, people are very kind, very loving, very affectionate. And you can get caught up in all of that in such an extent that you love the family so much that you forget to love Krishna. It happens. But Krishna is saying, no, engage your mind always in thinking of me. Whatever you're doing, do it for me. And he says, therefore, Arjuna, you should always think of me in the form of Krishna and at the same time perform your prescribed duty of fighting. At the same time, perform your prescribed duty of fighting. In this way, you'll be free from the bondage to work and all of its auspicious and inauspicious results. So he wants us, again and again, he wants us to remember him, to think of him. So when Bharat Maharaj was captured by some robber who wanted to have a son, and in order to have the son, he wanted to offer Bharat Maharaj, who was acting pretty much like a dumb idiot. He did it purposely so that people wouldn't bother him. Generally, when we see a person who looks like an idiot, we say, oh, I don't want to go near that guy. Yes, keep away from him. Who needs that? So that's what he wanted. Nobody should bother him so he could chant day and night, night and day, night and day, always remembering Krishna and feeling the ecstasy which was in. He wasn't making a show of his ecstasy, but he had it within. So the result was that when they washed him up and they put the sheets around him and they were about to and they put him on the altar, and they were about to decapitate him, cut his head off and offer to Kali, the deity of Kali burst apart and Kali Ma came out of that. And what did she do? She grabbed the cleavers from that particular man who was going to cut Bharat Maharaj's head off. She grabbed it, cut his head off, and then cut everybody else's head off. And then when after they drank all the blood and got fully intoxicated, they started throwing the heads around like you throw basketballs. This was their fun. The point I'm trying to make is that Bharat Maharaj, being a pure devotee, depending always on Krishna and not even caring, he wasn't even caring whether he got killed or not. His position was, if that's what Krishna wants, well, I'll get back faster if they cut my head off now. But he had another mission, which with King Rahugana, which would come a little bit later. So he didn't care. His feelings, his thoughts were, my dear Lord, if they cut my head off, and that's your wish, then that's my wish, and only good can come of it. This is the position of the pure devotee. So what happened, of course, they all got killed, and Bharat Maharaj got up, and he just walked off back to the road. And eventually he was, inducted to the service of King Rahugana, which is another story. So therefore, this story, wonderful, glorious story of Prahlad Maharaj, gives us an ideal. It's not only because he's a boy that the girls can't. The ideal is to be attached to Krishna, to be dependent upon Krishna, to be always in a mood of sacrifice. Whatever I do it as a love offering to Krishna. He deserves this. How can I hold it back from him? And if he's not giving me any difficulties, then I'll give myself difficulties as a way of saying to him, oh, austerity, as a way of just saying, you are worth the difficulty, the pain, the trial, the, the privation or tribulation I'm taking. I'm fasting for a day or two or three, whatever it is. You deserve whatever pain I'm feeling. You don't deserve the pain, but I deserve the pain because I gave you so much pain by flaunting your laws and your rules and regulations for so many countless years. I flaunted them. I ignored them. I neglected them. I was indifferent to them. I didn't care anything for them. And now I deserve to suffer. And you're taking it away, I'll give it to myself. And in so doing, when a devotee actually performs austerity in a mood of love and devotion, Krishna is extremely pleased. The wealth of the Brahman is austerity. And when it is done with a mood of appreciation for God's mercy, then it evokes from the Lord even more mercy. And we see, I did a little bit of studying some of these Catholic Christian saints, absolutely amazing. The austerities they would perform and the mercy that they got in the form of this pure love of God. They would pray, they would make people who were blind would see, who were deaf, who could hear, dead people were being raised from the dead, just with the purity of that they had. We're talking about real, not Sunday special people who go to church once a week. We're talking about people who spent their 24 hours just in devotional love. So what I'm trying to bring out is this, is that Krishna is ready, waiting, able to give us so much potency to increase, to spread, to expand this Hare Krishna movement. As he gave it to Srila Prabhupada so lovingly and so largely. The only thing that holds us back is our own limitations, is our own lack of devotional love for Krishna. It's our own lack of ambition to want to actually emulate what our Srila Prabhupada has given us. Sometimes a devotee takes the position, I could never get to the position of seeing God within. I could never get to the position. I'm too impure. That's a good start. Yes, we're impure. And if we take that position, my Lord, I'm too impure. I know I could never see you and talk to you and do all of this. But just help me to become pure and purer so that I can do better and better service to you. I will be fully satisfied. Once Dauruka, he was fanning Krishna, and he was overwhelmed with a tremendous ecstasy. He couldn't move his hand. He couldn't do this with his arms. Couldn't do it. And you know what he said? He didn't say, give me more ecstasy. He said, stop the ecstasy, Krishna, because I want to fan you. I want to serve you. I don't just, the ecstasy you can leave for another time when I'm alone. But now I just want to do my service because that is what gives me real pleasure to see you pleased. And if I see you pleased, the whole world will be pleased. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Any questions or comments or anything like that? No? Everybody agrees? Prahlad is a great devotee? Are we all going to aspire for that level of devotional love? Nobody's saying no? Yes? Hare Krishna. Thank you so much for all of you. You always say that.